This is the Love That Album Compilation Edition, covering soundtracks, tribute albums, best ofs, box sets, and more.
Warning, progressive metal ahead.
Looks like the computer gremlins have been conquered. So this is Eric Reanimator back with my compilation edition episode for September 2019. This is episode 60 of the compilation edition, and this is the countdown to my final episode, which will be November of this year. And for these last three episodes, I am going to be revisiting the three bands that really spoke to me and really made me the music fan that I am today around the year 1990, 91, 92. These are three bands that I was a major fan of, three bands that I saw live, and three bands that had three, four, five really great albums at the very beginning of their careers. Starting off with a band who had its big commercial breakout in 1990. They had started in the Seattle area way back in 1980, were often written off as a Iron Maiden clone. What spoke to me about them was the soaring operatic vocals, the intelligent sci-fi cyberpunk imagery that covered over the fact that they were talking about a relatively smart way. That band is Queensryche, and that's what we're listening to right now. Starting off with the title track from their EP, Queen of the Reich, you can kind of hear the blueprint for where they would go. Loud, fast, virtuosic, operatic, and maybe a little bit pretentious or silly. You want a good laugh, go and look up the video for this song and marvel at its 80s cheesiness. It's like a, not quite a canon film, but one of those era of B films that don't really know exactly what they're going for, but it's a hell of a lot of fun to watch. Anyways, let's sample some of the tracks from this EP, and then I will be back. A little bit of history of the band, and then a little bit of what it is about them that I connected with.
Thousand tries to hurt the echo, echo wind.
is The Mob. Queensryche had been a cover band in the Seattle area starting in 1980. By 1982-ish, they had their own material, and through a series of demo tapes and connections, they landed on EMI Records, eventually releasing their first album, The Warning, in, of course, I don't have the date right in front of me, I believe 84? Yes, 1984. Following that up fairly quickly with the rest of the albums we will be talking about, Rage for Order in 1986, Operation Mindcrime in 1988, and in 1990, their breakthrough commercial album, Empire. Followed that with a couple more records, Promised Land in 94, Here in the Now Frontier 97. And then from there, they kind of fell off as original guitar player Chris DeGarmo had left the band. I don't really follow much of what happened to them after that. I know that there's been a break in the band, and that there's two versions, and that there's a whole bunch of stuff going on that I don't even really care to explore. What matters to me is the music and the fact that they were like other bands out there, but at the same time, they were unlike other bands out there. One of the elements of metal that is often overlooked is the socio-political commentary that is underlying so much of the metal from bands like Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, talking about society, talking about issues that are going on in the world, corruption, environmental issues. There's a whole bunch of metal bands in this era that really hated one Tipper Gore, a white woman from the American South whose husband happened to be a senator, who got upset about Prince talking about female sexual pleasure and got her husband to waste U.S. taxpayer dollars on congressional hearings about lyrical content of rock music. You can look that up elsewhere. Queensryche, to my knowledge, never did engage in the anti-PMRC song cycle of that era. What they were talking about was teenage alienation, corporate malfeasance, institutional corruption, and the fear of technology. All of which is to say, a very cyberpunk kind of worldview, and I think it's probably telling that their first full-length album is called The Warning.
Is this wrong? I am
So inspired by the book 1984 and various world events, this is Queensryche coming into their cyberpunk era, really. The early stuff was much more of a fantasy science fiction metal. While 1984 is definitely a science fiction novel, it's also a social commentary novel. And this is where we get things talking about people becoming a number, not a name, and insanity, and the young being turned into robots and being repressed. This is the kind of topics that bands like Lords of the New Church were covering. And I gotta wonder, in hindsight, if this is a warning about how the boomers were gonna treat Generation X and Generation Y. I don't know, maybe. Anyway, moving along to their next album, Rage for Order. And if you think about it, these titles really do call out what it is the band is talking about. Warning, rage. We get the idea that something's not right in the world. Late stage capitalism has become the watchword today in 2019. But at this point, capitalism seemed to be going great guns, pardon the expression. And we were headed into Reagan's America and Thatcher's Britain is all I can really think of. But come 1986, Rage for Order gets released, and we start getting songs that are definitely much more William Gibson-esque. So at this point, the band's becoming more industrial, a little more gothic, a little more glammy. Their production is getting better. Their skill as a studio band is getting better. Lyrically, they're dealing with the same kinds of topics as before. If I had to pick, I would say maybe Rage for Order might be my favorite of their albums from this era. Maybe my favorite of their albums, period. However, what would come next would be their masterwork. And I know that I'm kind of skipping ahead a bit here, but let's talk about Operation Mindcrime. So as you can hear, maybe the sound gets a little more hard rock, a little less progressive and overproduced, maybe a little more 90s sounding. And I'm sure that there was an influence from what was going on in Seattle, because these guys seemed to have a clue as to what was going on around them. Additionally, if you listen to those lyrics, I mean, this is 1988 that Mindcrime is getting released, and I'm sorry, it's almost 30 years later, and what they're talking about is maybe more relevant today than it was then. It's almost as if they are prophesying the current status of the U.S. economy, U.S. government, and U.S. society. But that in no way stops them from writing songs that are emotional, that deal with the traditional musical topics of love, sex, and death. If you followed the last 60 episodes or so that I have done of this show, a couple of other people have filled in, and thank you once again to them, you'll know that you can pretty much count on it to be a snarky, cynical, but at the end of the day, potentially a romantic person. So hopefully you can see what all of this music would have hit me perfectly when, at the age of 18, I heard their big hit song on MTV for the first time. And this, of all things, is what hooked me.
Hush now, don't you cry. Wipe away the teardrop from your eye. You're lying safe in bed. It was all a bad dream spinning in your head. Your mind tricked you to feel the pain of someone close to you leaving the game of life. So here it is, another chance. wide awake, you face the day, your dream is over. Or has it just begun? There's a place I like to hide, a doorway that I run through in the night.
Yes, a power ballad. That is Silent Lucidity from 1990's Empire. So we're at the point now where the band is a decade old, and they are at the nexus of the end of pop hair metal and the coming of grunge. They are a band from Seattle that maybe has the street smarts of the grunge bands and the technical skill of the best of those hair metal bands. And then they got this vocalist who probably should have wound up going into opera about 10 years later. So yes, this is where I come in the story. I remember seeing it on MTV. I remember the video being kind of spectacular. I remember this being something different than the typical power ballads that we were hearing. I mean, this really isn't a power ballad. This is just a straight-up ballad with kind of a little bit of orchestral progressive hard rock instrumentation. It's maybe a little too smart to be the typical power ballad. I mean, I had to look up what Lucidity was at the time. It's even a fairly literate 18-year-old. And that's something else about this band. They're fairly literate. They know what they're talking about. There are songs on this album about the environment. There's songs about the criminal justice system. And then you have, you know, your love songs. So, I think that's about it for me and Queensryche. They're not a band that I listen to that often. I did get to see them live once. I saw them with opening band Typo Negative at the Palace of Auburn Hills in Detroit, Michigan. And after this, they had two more albums that I liked, and then things kind of fell off from there. And part of that was me getting older. Part of that was me discovering other musical styles. I think in hindsight, when I listen to this, I get kind of a nostalgic buzz from a lot of these songs and a lot of these records. But I do think there's a quality there, and I do think they're a band that hold up. And if any of this has sounded interesting to you, any of their output up to, say, 94 is well worth your time to check out. So, thank you for listening. We will be back next month to talk about another band from this era that had a huge impact on me. That was a band that I discovered around the same time. And I know I've talked about them before. So hopefully people will be able to figure that out. But until next time, I don't know, I'm supposed to have a catchphrase here or something. But enjoy your music. Later.
You saved the pain and the dream the main. Your soul set free to fly. A round trip journey.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike DelJudas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.